I interrupted you. You're just describing your first arrest and the deputation. And she put cardboard down your arms. Is that to stop people pinching you?
Yes, corrugated.
Yes.
And two pieces so that my elbow, I could move it, you see. She tied it all up and here, which was a good thing. And because the chocolate that was put in my coat pocket, that was stolen, I never got it, thinking it was a purse. And I was walked with, I think, Mr. Brailsford and another gentleman in this, and I think it was Mr. Brailsford, he had his gold watch and chains stolen in this crowd. Of course, all the riffraff come out. And the crowds then, it was like what election meetings used to be in my young day. I can see them now swaying like a field of corn with the waves of the heads. It was so packed. And the mounted police were out. And when we got up to the palace gate, I can also remember so clearly the railings and the police there on horseback, and that's where I was knocked down. And then, and I saw Keir Hardie there, and he was the only one that I could see that had come to see. And I remember so well he was wearing a cap and he had a red sort of tie or handkerchief. Here, I don't know whether it was a tie or a handkerchief around his neck, and he was just simply watching it with a face of wonderment in a way of speaking. It was the first and only time I ever saw him. Then after that, then I was arrested for obstruction, etc. And I had some marbles in my pocket which had not been taken, and I just took them and threw them down in a basement while I was arrested. But the policeman, it was very good, I wasn't rough-handled like some of the women. I didn't think it was any use. I'd gone out knowing that it was breaking the law, and we'd done it for a purpose. And the object, of course, was for publicity and to Mrs. Pankhurst. They were in the vanguard, and we were only small fry compared to her. When we got to the Cannon Row police station, then there was such a crowd, they'd run out of charge sheets, and we had to be waiting all night and into the morning before Mr. Prethiklons came to bail us out. And he came when he came, and then we had to appear. I think we were selected alphabetically to Bow Street Police Court the next morning. We had to be there at 10:30. I have a photograph there where I'm sat with a suitcase and in the crowd. I don't know what I'm sat on. But there were all those Covent Garden porters saying, jeering at us, and some cheery and making fun of us, of course. I can remember that all so well. Now, we were taken, although we had to appear, we had to go, and you will find that Miss Pepper was in that crowd. But her story is different to mine. She was in that, and because she'd got, I was C, They evidently took them alphabetically. That's all I could think of. But I was pretty early in getting a conviction, and that was for 7 days in Holloway. Now, the others then, they were all then out on bail. It took over a week. And Miss Pepper knows that part of it, because she was one that had to go out and come back, and she stayed a week with friends. I don't know whether she went to prison or not.
But you were in prison for a week then?
Yes, yes.
I see. So you went straight to prison?
Yes.
Didn't your
In the Black Maria.
Didn't your husband try and get you out or bail you out at all?
Oh, I wouldn't be bailed out.
I see, yes.
See, yeah. No, that was the modus operandi, was that we had to stick it.
So what happened? You went in the Black Maria. It must have been a memorable experience for you.
Oh, it was ghastly.
What happened?
Oh, we were cooped up in a little square place. Like a, I don't know whether we'd call it a cubicle or what. But it was like a, just the width of this chair. And there was a bit of a window in it for ventilation. And there's a little corridor down the Black Maria. And then all these little cubicles, I don't know another name for them. Then you were locked in those, see. And there was a policeman then inside, coachman I call it, and then we went, and there were no tires on Black Maria, and I tell you, we're rattling over the snow, you're up and down, like this. And then when we got to the Holloway, the doors, all the rattling of chains and keys. We got in, and we became a number.
There were several of you together, were they, going in together?
Well, there was a Black Maria full. We couldn't see who was in, see, till we got out.
And then what happened when you got out?
And Lady Constance Lytton was one of them.
Was she?
Yes. She was in Holloway. I became very friendly with Lady Constance Lytton.
Did you really?
Oh, yes. She was marvellous.
We
used to whisper to each other when we got into the yard, exercise yard.
What sort of person was she?
Oh, well, she was super. And a vegetarian, that's why. Strict vegetarian. Have you read her book?
I have, Prisons and Prisoners, yes, and her letters have been published as well.
Yes, have they?
Yes.
Oh.
Yes.
I didn't know.
What
I have some nice letters from Lord Lytton.
You have?
Yeah.
Have you really? Mm. Goodness. That's fascinating. What did you like about her, and what was attractive to you about her, really? She was very well bred, of course, wasn't she? I mean.
Yes, and she told me they were going to have a big bazaar with the Portman Rooms, and she was to be a stallholder. And this was a sort of Elizabethan period, and she asked me, when I was going out before her, and she said, would I take her place and take charge of her stall and wear her gowns, which had been made at a dressmaker's, because we were exactly the same figure. And this was an awful blow for my husband, who had sent a telegram coming to meet me to take me home. And I had to telegraph to him that I was staying on the Saturday to go to this bazaar, you see. And that was, of course, you see, one was always torn between duty, the heart, and the cause were two separate things, see. But what one suffered with the heart, I wouldn't let my worst enemy know or suffer what that meant. That was part and parcel, which is nobody knew of, you see, but which was not only endured by me, but many others.
Well, you must have been worried about Reg, wasn't you? When you
Everything. Mm. But my consolation was that I also had my mother behind me. I knew everything was cared for. And then I tried to comfort myself with that.
She took over your husband's household when you were away.
Absolutely.
Your husband got on well with your mother, did he?
Oh, yes. Although the difference at the beginning and that. And my husband paid a tribute to her. When she died, he said, although she was so against me, he said, I consider she was the most noble, unselfish woman I ever met in my life. So that was a very generous tribute.
Mm. Anyway, you got your number and you went to a cell, I suppose, did you? You had to have your clothes taken off. You had to put on special...
No, not then, because they'd got to the stage that we were political prisoners. We'd fought for that.
I see, yes. But you weren't hunger striking at that time, were
you?
Oh,
no. Mm. Vegetarian. Mm. Hard-boiled egg, nearly black, it was so old.
It must have been very worrying in prison, but in a way, was it fun as well, in a way?
No.
There a sort of feeling of companionship?
The only thing is then we used to scrape the knives on the iron things and say, are we downhearted? And then the others would reply again and... No, you see, and we tried our best to keep our spirits up, but it was horrid.
It was depressing, really, wasn't it?
So, yes.
Mm. Anyway, you had your week, and then you came to the bazaar. And then
yes, and so I took her place, and she gave me the key, and I went to her flat. She wasn't living there, she'd got a workman's flat near King's Cross. And so that was that, so I did my part for her, and the cause, of course, and then went home straight away. But, and it raised a lot of money, it was a wonderful, wonderful bazaar. Thousands of pounds were raised, but she was so disappointed. Now my connection with Lord Lytton was, years afterwards, I had been out shopping and I came back, and I switched on the radio, it was afternoon. And as soon as I heard anything, it was something about my Aunt Con. The voice was talking about my Aunt Con. And I sat down. I don't know why. But I had my hat and coat on. I hadn't taken it off. And he went on then, and eventually the suffragette movement and the family, and that's what he was talking about. Well, it sort of opened up such an avenue of thought for me in the past and that. Then I began to be haunted about the program I had about the bazaar and Hurst Hall. And I had then the biggest house, and that all these suffragette papers and things were in the loft. All that stacks of stuff at one time. And I was sort of impressed to write to him and send him this catalogue, which I did. And he wrote these letters to me about his Aunt Con. And I told him he could keep the catalogue, which he did. And they're very interested. Now, when those people came from Bradford, whom you know, they were interested in history, and the gentleman, he was more interested in the letters from Lord Lytton than any of the other things I had.
Yeah.
So you must see them.
Yes, well, that's very interesting. They're in Leeds now, the letters.
No, they're in that box.
Oh, they really, I'd love to see them. They'd be very interesting. Shall I switch off?
Very marvellous. I didn't realise that.
Also, the time I'm still closely in touch with a lot of them in Leeds yet.
Really? Why did you actually come down here, Mrs. Cohen?
Because I suddenly, the delinquency work, which I was chairman of the police court mission under the Diocese of Ripon, this was, and I got very tired of it. The keeping up with these boys, and they regarded us as, of course, as inferior mentality to what they had, calling us old fools and things like that. And when it was for my being re-elected, you see, when I retired from the bench, I was really long past the age of retirement before that bill came in. You see, the magistrates had to retire. And so then they asked me if I would take on this position because of my experience, that it would be so helpful to in all the years. And so I did. I thought it would be something to keep in touch with it all, but I had enough. And the response was, it wasn't 1% of these on probation, either with boys or girls. And we were trying to make them happier. We were trying to make money so as to give them different things, and they were getting their education and tuition at nights on different subjects which seemed to be fitted for them, and when they'd been vetted by a psychologist, etc., and what they absconded and all the... it was heartbreaking.
So you felt it was best to move out of the place altogether, you mean, and move here?
I thought, and then you see, ever at home, I was at the end of the telephone, people coming to me for advice because of my long experience, and they say, oh, you go see Mrs. Cohen. And these people, you know, you get them out of one lot of trouble, and then you never hear of them again till they're in the next lot of trouble, and then they come. But of course, all that period in my life, it would fill books, really.
I'm sure it would, yes.
Yeah. And so I thought, well, now I think I shall, now I'm 93, I shall not, I won't stand again for election. And I would retire, and I made up my mind I would sell the homes, the house, I would sell up everything, lock, stock and barrel, and come where nobody knew me.
It's very courageous, really, to do.
Well, it is. I wondered if I'd done that. And of course, the great heartbreak for me was leaving my son.
Because he's still there, isn't he?
Yes, and some magistrates' letters I have to say, you know, Mrs. Cohen, you left us, we haven't left you. And, of course, it was, well, the press, when they heard of my removal, they came to see me. And in those press cuttings that you've seen, there's a picture of me saying farewell to Barn Bull.
That's right, yes, I noticed that.
Well, that's where the great explosions was, and all those women were killed, and all the others injured. And I saw those women in the Leeds Infirmary in the ward. I had a full ward of these, and I dealt with them all the time I was in Leeds. I even had a question asked in the House of Commons about their condition. Mm. And these women, of course, they had been working, as I say, 52 hours in this filling factory, but it was not a pound a week, because it was a halfpenny an hour more on dangerous occupation.
This was munitions in the First World War?
Yes.
It? Yes.
Mm. And of course at that time I was on Mr. Churchill's Munitions Advisory Committee all during the war. And on that committee was Ernest Bevan and Margaret Bonfield and Mary MacArthur and Mrs. Councillor Locke and Miss Ellen Wilkinson and a few others.
Very distinguished group that is, isn't it?
Yes. So all during the war, but you see, I was the only one that had worked on munitions and knew every operation by heart.
Could you tell me, you were in the suffragette movement and very active in the suffragette movement right up to the First World War, weren't you?
Yes.
What happened when the war broke out? What did you decide to do?
Well, we was in Harrogate when then. What happened was, then the military came to take the house. I had then to have soldiers in the house, you see, and of course all our furnishings and everything, of course we could do what we liked, but there had to be so many rooms allotted to these soldiers. And I thought it over, and my husband, of course, he left it to me. I'll to stay there with the soldiers in the house, you see, or not, because they were looking for places for hostels for the soldiers that were in training, Britain and all those places round about Harrogate. They decided then that the best thing to do would be to go back to Leeds, which we did. So we sold up all the furniture, everything we could, and kept enough for a smaller house in Leeds. So we went back to Leeds.
You had quite a big house in Harrogate, did you then?
Yes, it was fairly, yes, fairly.
Yes.
Harlow Moor Drive.
Yes.
And so that was so then I decided then to volunteer for munitions. Well, now Mrs. Pankhurst wanted us to do. We had this big demonstration. Lloyd George appealed to Mrs. Pankhurst and the others for to hold a demonstration and a procession and to have the Royal Albert Hall for a mass meeting for to have volunteer workers to replace the men. Well, we had one in Leeds. Lord Harwood was the chairman and a member of Parliament, and the chief constable selected me then to be the woman speaker. And the Leeds Town Hall was packed to capacity. And I appealed for women to join as volunteers to replace the men wherever we could. And I also did 3 shows a night, theatres, music halls, cinemas, to ask for volunteers in all in the district adjacent to Leeds. And of course I couldn't do that unless I had volunteered myself first. And I told you I'd never been in a factory. But I did, and I stuck it, because the others, and of course the women, they rolled up, we got them. And that was a piece of work that the other women would be doing in different parts of the country.
See? What was it like going in a factory the first time?
Oh, dreadful. The machinery and the smell of the oil and... Oh, I bet on the lathe. I've never seen a lathe in my life. And I was put on 36, what they call base finishing on 36 pounder shells. And they had to be perfect. And they had to be neither convex or concave. And it really worried me to death, but I was determined to master it. But the others in the factory, it was the Leeds Forge that I went to. The other women were very happy with it, and of course the wage was so marvellous, £1 a week for 52 hours. That was the first statutory order that was made for a lift up of women's wages after the trade board.
Did you get on with the other women quite well? And they were working women, I suppose.
Well, they were different, but I found they had good hearts. And they were rough. Of course, quite suitable for the work and factories. But the foreman, he was very sarcastic to me. He didn't like me because he talked to the others and they seemed to be all idle fellow, well met sort of business. And I found out afterwards that he drank, that he kept spirits in his hip pocket. And I think that's... anyhow, he apologized to me at one time, and something had gone wrong with the machine, and I had been trying to manipulate it, and I had put a muscle out of this arm. And one night, and it was very weird, all these lights on the machinery, you see, and no lights up above, because all light directed onto the machine. And the machine's going, and sort of weird old talk about these satanic mirrors, I thought of that. And he came to me one night, and he said, "What made you come to do this work?" I said, "Because I want to help with the war." I said, I want to help and to show that I can be a citizen. And he said, "Do you know?" He said, "I want to tell you." He said, "You're a good woman, aren't you?" I said, I don't know. I said, I know all my imperfections. He said, but you know, when I come near you, he said, I feel bad. But I never argued, but that was our... And ever after that, he treated me with respect. It was never mentioned. He didn't know that I knew he drank. And I never meant, well, no. The climax of this was, I told you I joined the union before I went into the factory.
Which union was that? The General General?
Yes, yes.
Municipal Worker, yes. Wasn't it? I've got it down here.
Yes, and I wish I could. My son has my first trade union card there because people have wanted to see it, and he has it in the safe there. And because it is quite a novelty, and which of course will be for our union, of which I've kept up my membership up to date.
That was the first time you'd ever joined a union, when you joined?
Oh yes, we never heard about unions. I didn't adapt up. My education was all in suffrage and meeting the miners leaders and taking an interest in strikes and what was happening in those days. You see, that was my education. You see, I had no other means.
Did you get quite good at making munitions after a bit, and did you pick it up?
Oh, I mastered it. Well, so then I couldn't lift my arm. And so the doctor, I saw it, and he said it was synovitis of the muscle. In the meantime, I was off work, you see, resting my arm. One morning, about 6:30, I heard such a noise. And I looked out of the bedroom window, and there was all the munition girls there, and they were serenading me to get to come to the window and all sorts of things in there. And so I put on my dressing gown and came down. My husband was away, I was alone. I came down and I said, what's all this about? Why have you come to me? Because we think that we've talked it over and we think that you could lead us. I said, I don't know. I said, we found out that you're in a union, aren't you? I said, yes. So they said, what about it? We're on strike. Well, I said, no recompense for you. So incidentally, that was the beginning of my career, see, with these women. I got in touch with the Ministry of Labour on their behalf.
What were they striking about, actually, Mrs. Cohen, then?
The wages, the conditions and something that had happened.
In the munitions factory,
you see. But I wasn't there, so I...
Because you were ill with your arm being
that's
injured.
That's right. Yes. That was off duty. However, the beginning of that was then so that I went to my union, I called it, you see, which was then, and I saw Mr. Williams. And he said, oh, well, you'll have to have an organizer down, you see. So there was a lot of preliminaries. And so we got, to make a long story short, other munition workers came my way, all by accident. I never sought one, never one. I was on, I was better then, and I was on the tram car going to Hunslet, and I saw a crowd of women in blue overalls, and I knew that they were munition workers. And after this experience, I instinctively knew that they'd come out, but they were all some sort of trouble. So I jumped off the tram car, there was no buses in those days, jumped off the tram car, got out, and I went into the middle of these women and told them I was a munition worker and where and what happened. And so they said this mill, this factory was George Mann's, and their firm was Lithographic Machinery, but it was they were on munitions, you see. There was foreign women as well as English women. There was a lot from Belgium there among these women. And while I'm talking to these women, up comes the superintendent of the Hunslet division. His name eludes me just at the moment, but of course he knew me.
Not Walton, was it?
No.
No.
No, Dalton. Dalton.
Mm.
That was my bodyguard. And so he came up to me and he said, "Now, Mrs. Coyne, what, are you in trouble again?" "No," I said, "I am not." I said, "What about these women?" I said, "They're out on strike." "Well," he said, "you know, are you in charge of them?" I said, "No." So the women said, "Oh, we want her." And so he said to me, he said, "Well, you know, this is obstruction, Mrs. Coyne." He said, how are you going to clear it?" So he talked to these women, and he said, "You must get them off the road." So I said, "Well, I don't know. There's the Mechanics Institute across the road, not far away." I said, "I'll engage a room there," and I went to the mechanics, and "I'll take them with me." And of course we filled the place. And then I talked to these women. In the meantime, I had to send a message then to the Trades Council and to ask for an organizer to come. You see, I was only a member of the union. I wasn't in any way fitted for this. I had to learn. So when he came, so waited. In the meantime, I told them that I was what I was doing, and I told them in the speech I made about all the operations, so on, the weights. And they said what all the different phases of munition was. "Well, I had no paper, I had a pencil," and a woman had a pencil. And she went, and I took down all the items relating to the occupational, see, work, and I had it all written down on these rolls of paper for when the organizer came. And he looked at me, and his name was Mr. Leary, and he said, "You know, Mrs. Coyne, you're a born organizer." He said, "I couldn't have done this." And he's the organizer. Well, then I sought an interview then with the people, and the two women with me, and Mr. Leary. Oh, then the managers were Oh, they were awful. Vitriolic. I couldn't think of the word strong enough.
Could I just move the microphone? So anyway, they were rather rude, were they, in their manner?
He wouldn't have anything to do with the trade union, the women. So I said, all right, we keep out. So then, arising out of that, a Ministry of Labour conciliation officer came from Mr. Leary then. He did that. And he got this conciliation officer, and of course he was a gentleman really, and he talked to me about it, and of course I told him, of course I was only a member of my union. Well, arising out of all this, George Mann, that was the owner's name, and of course they were craftsmen.
What was the firm actually? It wasn't munitions firm, this one, was it?
Yes, they were on munitions, you see, all these places were on munitions then, you see. But it was, the engineering works was lithographic machinery, you see, for printers and that sort of thing. And they accused me, and they pointed me to a poster of course, against Germany, you see, and the Kaiser, and his hands all dripping with blood. Did you ever see a poster like that? Horrible thing it was, but it was, of course, to show us what Germans were, etc. And he pointed to this to me. And he said, you're no better than this man. However, to make a long story short, which was a very long story, there were 2 or 3 days before I got them back to work. In the meantime, I couldn't go to work, and I didn't go to work, and I had to... it was a means of my giving up. And so what happened was, Mr. Leary, he said, well, now there's, you, what you do, you form a branch. We haven't a branch of munition workers. There isn't one attached to the Trades Council. He said, but you, under our, you see, can then be elected for the secretary, and you can form a branch of munition workers, which I did. And then from that, then I found out that we were like wanderers in the desert. So then we were not part of the Trades Council. And the Trades Council laws were not for women only, for men only. And then I had the backing of the union then, you see. On all its phases, thousands and thousands, you see. Then I was somebody. I had then now the ammunition. So I got my branch affiliated then to the trade union. Trades Council, I mean. Went on from one thing to another, and they called on me to take meetings, and then there was other strikes, and they came to me, and then this statutory rules and orders that there were for munition workers, I began very conversant with that. And then there was another lot of workers that they came out on strike, and they came to me, and I got a list of their wages, and I found out that they were being underpaid. And so then I took them to the tribunal. And of course, and the case I won on the tribunal in Leeds, there was then a munitions tribunal. but the firm appealed against it and they took it to High Court. So then I had to go up to London and I had to be vetted by the chief organisers and all the conditions and everything about it. And the union employed Henry Slessor. Do you know
him? I heard the name, yes.
Well, he became a member of Parliament for Leeds, Henry Slessor. He was a QC, or KC at that time, I don't know which. But he wasn't considered by the union to be then the expert on industrial law. As a matter of fact, so then I have to go to London and then this case is going to be heard there in the High Court. I have to meet Henry Slessor and give all the details, etc., etc. Well, I'd written nearly all of it down by that time. And the judge, he was a very nice man, because he referred to my learned friend being as Henry Slessor on the point of law. However, I, through him and what I had to say, then I won the case. So then I became a top-notcher.
When you first started trade union organisation, did you give up working in the factory then as a
manager? I had to. It was the Leeds Forge. Yes, I had to give it up.
Did you, because of your arm or because your trade union work?
They both. You see, they were very glad to be rid of me, as it turned out.
Yes.
When they knew what was happening.
Yes.
Of course, it went round like wildfire.
Do you think your work in the suffragette movement trained you up for all that in a way?
Oh, no doubt, definitely it did. Because we had to face hostile crowds and meetings, and I know that, and one arrest that was made, there was a meeting at the Miners' Institute that I'd made one Sunday. And Dalton, of course, in plain clothes, taking notes, and put all the things wrong that I said. Well, what they do, they fiddle it. They put it in what I would say, then they would make it, alter it, you see, and put it in juxtaposition. For instance, I said one of the things that had happened, the militancy had started then, and it was in the thick, and there'd been fires, and several places where there'd been fires. I think Lillian Lenton did one, but I didn't know anything about that, excepting the country was blazing with rage about the fires, you see, in different places, football stands and all sorts of places. And I, in my speech, I said that three pennyworth of firelighters had done more to blazon our cause for votes for women than all the thousands of meetings and processions that had ever been held in the first 100 years. But he didn't. He said, I was trying to get people roused up to buy three pennyworth of firelighters and go, I ask you. They wouldn't buy a box of matches, never mind anything else. Certainly never one volunteer.
So what was your attitude to the war, Mrs. Cohen? I mean, you weren't a pacifist at all then. I mean, you didn't believe in...
I'm a dead pacifist in my heart. But I'm not going to sit down as I do and on the bench. That was, of course, and I was used to... They used to save these people for me that wouldn't go into a directed occupation. And the majority of these women where women that belonged to the Four Square Gospel.
This is in the Second World War, isn't it?
Yes. And I had to deal. With those, and I had the utmost patience. But they wouldn't go into directed occupation, not even to a dry cleaners where they all the